asking of his counselors how he should treat the people. The counselors of his father Solomon said that he should make the burdens lighter on the people of Israel because much had been laid upon them, and at least in part due to the building ventures of Solomon, the temple, not the least of which, of his various building projects. He had many. And Rehoboam spurned the counsel of his father's advisors, Solomon, of course, now dead. And he looked to his own peers, and he asked of them, and they said, make the burdens on the people even greater. And he listened to them. And the 10 northern tribes rebelled against Rehoboam and fled, and decided to have a king all of their own. And we see these things happening here in chapter 12. Now, we want to notice some things here about that, about what he will do later. Now, if you get down to chapter 12 and verse 25, we want to notice what Jeroboam decides to do. And then we're going to back up a little bit and notice what he should have done. Now, verse 25 of 1 Kings 12 says, then Jeroboam built Shechem in Mount Ephraim and dwelt therein, and went out from thence and built Penuel. And Jeroboam said in his heart, now shall the kingdom return to the house of David. If this people go up to do sacrifice in the house of the Lord at Jerusalem, then shall the heart of this people turn again unto their Lord, even unto Rehoboam, king of Judah, and they shall kill me and go again to Rehoboam, king of Judah. So here is what Jeroboam decides. Now you notice in verse 26, Jeroboam said in his heart, who did the speaking and where was the speaking? I need to rephrase that question clear enough. In that verse, who did the speaking, as it were?
Himself.
Where did he do the speaking? In his heart. What does that mean? Where was the source of his thoughts? Well, who came up with the idea? Let's put it that way. He did. He is the source of this plan. Well, if he's the source, could it have been God? Did his plan come from God? Well, it's explicitly stated, and then we find the details of the plan. We find out for sure it's not of God. But what I want you to understand here, the reason why I'm asking these questions, is that Jeroboam said in his own heart. He's the one that devised these things, and it'll say that later as we get down to verse 33. He made this up himself. He decided to be his own authority in things concerning worship, and we need to notice that. Now, what is all of this plan? Well, he gives an excuse to begin with, that if this people go up to do sacrifice in the house of the Lord at Jerusalem, then shall the heart of this people turn again unto their Lord. That's the king of Judah, Rehoboam. And they shall kill me and go again to Rehoboam, king of Judah. Now, did Jeroboam know that for sure? He didn't know that. Now think about this for a minute, brethren. Jeroboam drew a conclusion based on supposition, based on assumption. What does that make Jeroboam in logical terms?
Irrational,
exactly, Mike. Good job.
Well, it even goes beyond that too, John, because God had already told him what he would do for him.
Oh yeah, we're going to back up to that in a little bit. Yeah. Yeah, he had all that. So that makes it even more irrational and illogical. Anybody remember the definition of the law of rationality?
Not in terms.
Okay. Well, what does it mean in ordinary terms? Law of rationality.
Conclusions based on, only based on the facts of evidence.
Right. One should draw only such conclusions as are based upon evidence, not supposition. Well, he drew a conclusion, didn't he? And he's not only drew the conclusion, but he acted on it here. Oh, the people will turn away from me and go back to Rehoboam. And we'll understand a little bit more about these things. As Jamie made mention, we're going to turn back a little bit and notice what God had already told Jeroboam would happen. And he's going against all of that. Well, now notice what he actually does. So here's the working of his plan. Yes, sir?
He was paranoid, too. He had left and was dwelling in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Because of Solomon, yeah. Solomon tried to kill him.
Yeah, so I mean,
which was wrong.
He had that element of fear and paranoia. He was paranoid about all of this.
Yeah.
He came up, you know, a lot of times people do that. They're paranoid about something and they come up with, and out of that paranoia, a fear of something that will happen is irrational.
Right. Well, fear, paranoia, anxiety are often the impetus. Any of those three or all three often are the impetus for irrationality or irrational behavior. Instead of going on what is, instead of going on what you think is the case. We can understand that. I have done that.
I understand it on a daily basis. That's what makes my phone ring.
Oh yeah, people's upset because they think that
something critter scares them to death. They got a phobia.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Well, I mean, you can see irrationality even in that at times. Whereupon the king, Jeroboam, took counsel and made two calves of gold. Does that remind you of anything? Sunday? Evening? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Exodus chapter 32. Whereupon the king took counsel and made two calves of gold and said unto them, it is too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. Behold thy gods, O Israel, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. Do you remember what the people said concerning the golden calf that they had made there in Exodus chapter 32 while they were waiting for Moses to come down out of the mount? Behold, O Israel, here is your gods that brought you out of Egypt. Same thing, isn't it? Well, in this case, there's two of them and not one. So they've immediately replaced God. He'd already proclaimed that I am the one that brought thee out of the land of Egypt. Exodus 20, 1 through 4 there. Now notice verse 29 here of 1 Kings 12. And he set the one in Bethel and the other put he in Dan. Anybody know why it's specified here, one in Dan and one in Bethel? There's a reason for that. The reason why he did that. Well, if you'll open, huh?
It wouldn't have to go as far to
He did. Now, if you open to the back your Bible, if you have maps, you can look. And you'll see the dividing line between the tribe of Judah and tribes of Judah and Benjamin are collectively called Judah in the south, the southern kingdom. Jerusalem was right on that border line, cutting across there, east to west, right along where Jerusalem is. Samaria is north of that. 10 northern tribes take the rest of Israel to the north. Now, if you look there, that just north, across the line, just north of Jerusalem, is Bethel. That's the southerly, that would be a southerly point for the 10 northern tribes. And then if you go north, it's going to be around, I think, a little bit north and east of Mount Carmel. Mount Carmel's that little thumb-looking piece of ground that sticks out on the western side of Israel. Dan is in that area there. Well, what... I'm not looking at a map there either. I'm just doing that out of memory. So, anyway, Dan is at the north, and Bethel, of course, is in the south. And the reason why Jeroboam set those two is so he covered all of the 10 northern tribes. He covered it north and south. And the people would travel south through the 10 northern tribes to get to Jerusalem, but they would hit Bethel first. So there, keep you from going on down across the line and into Jerusalem where you were supposed to go. Then you go, you stop at Bethel. He would catch the people. That's the reason why he put one in the south in Bethel and in the north Dan. Now, you'll notice in other places if it talks about all of Israel, say from Dan to Beersheba, that was just an idiom, Hebrew idiom. That's all of Israel, north to south, Dan to Bethel, or Dan to Beersheba. And in this case, it's Dan to Bethel, which would take in all of the 10 northern tribes, all of that land area. Okay? So that's why he set those two calves there. Obviously, why he has two calves. Now, notice verse 30. And this thing became a sin, for the people went to worship before the one, even unto Dan. So this thing's going to become a sin. Well, it was already a sin when it came forth from Jeroboam. But now all the people, the 10 northern tribes, are getting all caught up in this. Now remember, Jeroboam is the first king of the 10 northern tribes. They will never have a good king. Never. Every one of them will be evil. Some more, some less. Well, Jeroboam is setting a precedent, and they'll follow that continually until 721 when Assyria comes and takes away the 10 northern tribes and brings an end to them. Now notice verse 31, and he made an house of high places and made priests of the lowest of the people, which were not of the sons of Levi. Who were the priests? Of what tribe and also of what family were the priests of God supposed to come from?
Levitical and also through Aaron.
Yeah, of the tribe of Levi and specifically of the seed line of Aaron would come the priests. And of the other families of the Levites would come those who would take care of the things pertaining to the priesthood. God gave the other families of the tribe of Levi to Aaron and his sons to be ministers to them. Find that especially happening there after Numbers 16 there.
31, mine doesn't use the word house, it uses shrines.
Shrines, okay. Yeah, that'd be fine there too. High places, places to worship. And he made priests of the lowest of the people. Now, if you look under the laws of the priesthood, the Levitical priesthood, they had to be... they couldn't have physical blemishes. Priests couldn't. If you had a broken nose, if you had a crushed limb, you had something, leprosy, not, you couldn't serve as a priest. You couldn't. God wouldn't allow that. They had to be without blemish. They couldn't... They were held to a little bit stricter law so far as their personal conduct even was concerned. There was a little bit more lenience as to options concerning the other people. And so, notice here that it says that Jeroboam made priests. Whose priests? His or God's? His, of course. Of the lowest of the people. The very basest people.
Mine says from every class of people.
Okay. The lowest people. Not of the sons of Levi. So he's made a very big mistake here in several ways. We're going to notice that in a bit. Then notice verse 32, and Jeroboam... did you have a question, brother?
Yeah.
I thought I saw your hand. Okay. All right. We'll come back to you in just a second. And Jeroboam ordained a feast in the eighth month, on the 15th day of the month, like unto the feast that is in Judah. And he offered upon the altar. So did he in Bethel. sacrificing unto the calves that he had made, and he placed in Bethel the priests of the high places which he had made. What did Jeroboam do?
Set up a worship.
Yeah, he set up God's worship?
No.
No. What worship did he set up?
Images, graven images.
Well, whose worship? Whose worship? To whom did it belong?
His own.
His own. All right. Like unto the feast that was properly in Judah. Is it okay to have worship that is like biblical worship? Or do you have to have worship that is biblical worship? Which one do you have to have? You have to have worship that is biblical worship, not just like it. Well, in the seventh month, on the 15th day, they had a worship in Jerusalem, where it was supposed to be. In the seventh month, you had the Day of Atonement and the Feast of the Tabernacles. It's two that were in that month. Of course, three main feast times. You had the Passover, the Day of Pentecost. You had Feast of Tabernacles, also the Day of Atonement involved there as well. That's not all the feasts that they had. There were other days, of course, the Sabbath day. Every last day of the week was a holy day unto God. But it says that he did it in the eighth month. Is the eighth month and the seventh month one and the same? What does it make his worship? It makes it substitutionary. Is a substitute worship acceptable to God? It isn't, is it? You can't substitute something you want. You have to go back now to verse 26, Jeroboam said in his heart. This all came out of Jeroboam. It didn't come out from God. It wasn't God's commandments. It was Jeroboam. Well, he sacrificed unto the calves that he had made, and he placed in Bethel the priests of the high places which he had made. So he offered upon the altar which he had made in Bethel the 15th day of the 8th month, even in the month which he had devised of his own heart, the Scripture says. And ordained a feast unto the children of Israel, and he offered upon the altar and burnt incense. Did he have a right to change the worship that God had established? Why?
He didn't have the authority.
He didn't have the authority, did he? Same principle that we find in Colossians 3 and verse 17. Whatsoever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, by His authority. God had already established their worship for these things. He'd already established those things. We turn over to...
Obviously, he was a man that wasn't given to worshiping God to start with. The only reason I say that is because, for him to provoke God the way he's doing, he gave no regard.
No, it
all especially he was trying to do is satisfy the people.
Yeah, for his own benefit, for his own enrichment, as far as his own profit, I should say, in as king. He didn't want the people to leave and leave him alone as without a kingdom, and he thought they might kill him and so forth. We're going to notice. Let's see. We want to notice Leviticus here. Let me see here.
Sometimes, too, John, there's other elements in there, too. Like with the house of Solomon or the house of David, to actually provoke them and to drive a wedge. Obviously, as Dwayne already said, he had his own fears and about what he was doing, but you don't know that it isn't also that it's his way of kind of lashing back, because he fled to Egypt when Solomon was alive, and maybe something to that as well. He's provoking them too.
Well, he turns out not to be the kind of king that God told him to be, and we're going to notice that in a moment. Let's turn to Leviticus chapter 23, and this outlines the feast of God that he had established. We're going to begin in verse 23, talks about the Passover, verse 6, verse 15, and 16, the Passover, the Pentecost, Feast of Pentecost. And now in verse 23, we'll notice some things about the seventh month, which this feast time of Jeroboam seems to be something similar. Notice verse 23, "And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying..." Now what does that mean when it says, "And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying"? That's "thus saith the Lord," isn't it? In other words, here's a commandment of God. "Speaking to the children of Israel, saying, In the seventh month, in the first day of the month, shall ye have a Sabbath, a memorial of blowing of trumpets, and holy convocation." It was a holy day. First day of the month. Sabbath day. Sabbath of memorial, a memorial blowing the trumpets. "You shall do no servile work therein, but you shall offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord." Notice verse 26, "And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, On the tenth day of this seventh month, there shall be a day of atonement." That was a very important day. That was the only day in the whole year wherein the high priest would go into the Holy of Holies. Only got to go in there one day a year. And only one person got to go in, and that was the high priest. And that was to do service for the entire nation of Israel. And notice what it says about that. "This day of atonement, it shall be an holy convocation unto you, and you shall afflict your souls, and offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord. And you shall do no work in that same day, for it is a day of atonement, to make an atonement for you," that's the whole nation of Israel, "before the Lord your God. For whatsoever soul it be that shall not be afflicted in that same day, he shall be cut off from among his people." Death penalty. That's what that is. If you will not consider what this day means, you do not know that the high priest is taking blood into the most holy place for your sake, that you might live. Well, they had to do this each year, and that's the reason why the New Testament talks about the remembering of sin each year. Well, they had to go into the most holy place. The high priest had to go in, and it made remembrance of their sin year by year. Some people can talk about it rolling forward each year. Well, that's because it couldn't, in fact, be forgiven until the Christ died on the cross. Now, verse 30, "And whatsoever soul it be that doeth any work in that same day, the same soul will I destroy from among his people. You shall do no manner of work. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations in all your dwellings until the time of the cross. You shall do these things. And it shall be unto you a Sabbath of rest, and you shall afflict your souls." You're supposed to remember what this day is about. "And the ninth day of the month at even, from even until even, or evening unto evening, shall you celebrate your Sabbath." And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying," next thing, "speak unto the children of Israel, saying, the 15th day of the seventh month," we're still in that seventh month, notice, "shall be the Feast of Tabernacles," or booths. Tabernacles would be a temporary dwelling, sometimes has reference to tents, and in this case it has to do with the same type of tabernacle that Jacob made earlier in chapter 34, in chapter 33, for his cattle, the same type of idea, a temporary dwelling place or temporary shelter made of branches and tree boughs and that sort of thing involved here. "Speak unto the children of Israel, saying, the 15th day of the seventh month shall be the Feast of Tabernacles for 7 days unto the Lord." Now verse 35. "On the first day shall be an holy convocation. You shall do no servile work therein. 7 days you shall offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord. On the eighth day shall be an holy convocation unto you, and you shall offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord. It is a solemn assembly, and you shall do no servile work therein. These are the feasts of the Lord, which ye shall proclaim to be holy convocations, to offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord, a burnt offering and a meat offering, a sacrifice, drink offerings, everything upon his day." God's laying this out in detail as to what they're allowed to do, what they must do, what they're commanded to do. Did he leave any leeway here for Jeroboam to come along and say, "Well, I think it would be a good idea to add this thing, and we'll make this a thing of worship, and that'll be good. It'll be like what we do Jerusalem, but it'll be a little bit different. Isn't that okay? It's not, is it? You don't have to go any further than the precept that's taught in Colossians 3 and verse 17. It's just not authorized. And that ends it. You don't have to understand more than that not to do it. It's just because God had told them what they were supposed to do, and if you do anything else, it's sin. It really is that simple, isn't it? And people don't seem to get that sometimes. Jeroboam certainly did not understand. Now, any questions on that part or comments? Maybe Brother Burke wants his parallel there.
I'd like to point out that Jeroboam did all he could to get free, but he could control and won't control.
Right.
And it's sad to say, same thing is true with some preachers today. I'm not referring to you. I don't think you'd ever be like that. But they go work for a congregation that has elders. Now, when they find out they can't control the elders, they'll work as hard as they can to get me and Ian that they can control. So they want to control the congregation through the elder, the qualified elder.
Yeah, true. That does happen, unfortunately. It certainly does. And it's very, very terrible as such. What happened? Now, turn to 1 Kings chapter 11. I want to notice we're backing up now. We went through in some detail about what Jeroboam is doing after he became king. One of the very first things that he did, he built Shechem and he built, Let's see. Let me get where I want to be. Yes, it was Shechem. I'm sorry. Shechem and Penuel. Now, in other words, he built those up and made them what he wanted. And then he sets up this new worship. Now, if we go back one chapter to 1 Kings 11, before he becomes king, notice in verse 29 of that chapter, 1 Kings 11. And it came to pass at that time when Jeroboam went out of Jerusalem that the prophet Ahijah the Shilonite found him in the way, and he had clad himself with a new garment, and they two were alone in the field. And Ahijah caught the new garment that was on him and rent it, or tore it, in 12 pieces. He's using this as an illustration by the command of God. And he said to Jeroboam, "Take thee 10 pieces, for thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel, behold, I will rend the kingdom out of the hand of Solomon." Why did he do that?
Because of the sin of Solomon.
Yeah, Solomon was the one, you may not remember this, Solomon is the one who introduced in a big way concerning after Israel became a kingdom, that is, after they had kings, Solomon is the one that introduced idolatry into Israel. And some of his images and idols will last for hundreds of years in Israel before they're finally destroyed later.
That should have taught Jeroboam something right there.
Well, yeah, it should have, shouldn't it? Well, here is Ahijah, prophet of God, telling him. He's going to tell him what's going to happen. Now notice what God is going to offer Jeroboam. Now this is before he built, before he became king of Israel, the 10 northern tribes now, it's called Israel, and before he built those two calves, or made those two calves, and set up calf worship in Dan and Bethel. This is before that happened. Okay? Here's the precursor, here's the background for what Jeroboam should have been thinking, how he should have acted based on what Ahijah told him. Now, Ahijah has rent his garment into 12 pieces, and he told Jeroboam, "Take thee 10 pieces." This is verse 31. "For thus saith the Lord," here's the word of God, "the God of Israel, behold, I will rend the kingdom out of the hand of Solomon." Did God ever cease being the God of Israel? Do you realize the import of why I'm saying that? There will become two kingdoms, but God will still be the same God over both of them. He's just going to change, going to divide His kingdom into two pieces, but it's still His kingdom. And God will still refer to the whole nation as Israel. Sometimes when He's being specific, He'll talk about Judah, or He'll talk about the 10 northern tribes as Israel. And sometimes He talks about all of them together as Israel.
Sometimes
nothing changed.
His two sisters.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Sometimes he mentions it that way. And Israel, the older sister.
Or wives that forsaken Him.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the reason why Israel was, and Judah later, became spiritual adulterers. They committed fornication with other nations, spiritually speaking. That is, that they left God and worshipped idols and made leagues with other nations and leaned on them instead of on God. That's a good point. And so, Ahijah continues to say of God, "Behold, I will rend the kingdom out of the hand of Solomon and will give 10 tribes to thee, to you, Jeroboam. You'll have 10. There'll be 2 left. But he shall have 1 tribe for my servant David's sake and for Jerusalem's sake, the city which I have chosen out of all the tribes of Israel." Notice what God's saying. The place where God would choose for men to worship Him. He told Israel that many times. You will hold your feast. You will worship Me where I choose to place My name. That's where the tabernacle will be. That's where the temple was built. God had told the people so many times, "You will do this worship where I tell you to do it." Did God tell Jeroboam to set up idols in Dan and Bethel? Neither one of those places was the place where God had already determined that men, Israel, should worship Him. And that was in Jerusalem. Under the law of Moses, now we're talking about. This is strictly for Israel, the whole nation of Israel. Just because the kingdom is going to be divided in two, God didn't set up a separate place for them to worship. They still had to come to Jerusalem. Now, we'll understand a little bit more about that as we read on. Now, verse 33, "Because that they have forsaken Me and have worshipped Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Zidonians," or Sidonians with an S, "Chemosh, the god of the Moabites, and Milcom, the god of the children of Ammon, and have not walked in My ways to do that which was right in Mine eyes and to keep My statutes and My judgments as did David his father." Now, who is it that worshipped Ashtoreth, Chemosh, and Milcom? Who is it here? Who did I just mention introducing idolatry? It was Solomon. Why did Solomon go after those gods? You remember?
Because of his wives.
How many wives did he have? 700. How many concubines did he have?
300.
And it said his wives turned his heart away from God. It says that Solomon clung or clave unto these in love. But he made leagues with other nations through these wives.
We have God's word, though, to the children of Israel as they were depossessing 7 nations for their idolatry and the sins that they committed, and He said not to join to them for these very reasons.
Yeah, He said that their idolatry will become thorns in your eyes, will become snares to you, and it did to Solomon. Now, in Deuteronomy chapter 17, long before Israel ever had a king, God told Israel through Moses that there will come a time when Israel will have kings. They will wish a king. Now, this is where the passage from which the book of Deuteronomy gets its name. Now, the book of Deuteronomy means the second law, as it were, and that comes from the Greek, comes from the Septuagint translation of the Bible. That's the reason why the word there is Deuteronomy, not the Hebrew name. God told Moses to write this down. They were to command every king in Israel to write him a copy of this law and meditate upon it day in and day out, day and night. It was not to leave him. He was to meditate upon the law of God that he might remain faithful. Well, did Solomon do that? No, he didn't.
David sure did.
David did. He surely did. Solomon did at various times. But his wives finally took him away from God. And we see the outpouring or the things that came from that idolatry. Okay, now back to verse 34 now. We've got 2 minutes till we have to take our break. Howbeit, I will not take the whole kingdom out of his hand. That's from Rehoboam. But I will make him prince all the days of his life for David my servant's sake, whom I chose because he kept my commandments and my statutes. But didn't David do terrible things?
He strayed.
Yeah, he did, didn't he?
He sinned.
He had Uriah, the husband of Bathsheba, murdered. He committed fornication and adultery. I should say adultery is more specific there. With Bathsheba. He numbered the people when it wasn't God's command to number the people. And many people were killed because of that. But God says right here that David kept his commandments and his statutes. Why?
Because he repented.
Because he repented. Because he was faithful. He sinned, but he repented of those sins and went forward. Could we say that Peter kept the commandments of the Lord? Didn't he deny Christ after they were scattered when Judas came and brought the guards from the priests? And they took Jesus. He repented of that. Didn't he, as was recorded in Galatians chapter 2, wasn't he hypocritical before the brethren and even took away some of the faithful into his hypocrisy, including Barnabas? In Galatians chapter 2, and Paul withstood him to the face because he stood to be blamed? Yes, Peter did those things. But what about 2 Peter chapter 1, where Peter talks about the putting off of his tabernacle was soon? He was faithful. He knew he was ready. He knew that there was a crown of righteousness laid up for him, as Paul would say in 2 Timothy chapter 4. Same thing for David. They sinned. Peter sinned. David sinned. But they repented of those things. And you'll see the difference here with men like Jeroboam, and later Omri and Ahab. They didn't. They just kept on. Now notice the difference in the attitude here between Israel, or between David and men like Peter and then Jeroboam. But we have to take our break. And it is time, 7:45. Okay, we'll take our break.
Stubborn.
Yeah, stubborn. Mm-hmm.